Good morning. I apologize if I don't sound quite right or if I end up coughing and or sneezing and or whatever else. This morning I'm in the process of getting over some sinus stuff. So please excuse me if I happen to take a brief break randomly in this sermon. Yes. So I have heard a few sermons on Acts 19. One of them being last week when Mark Wilson was here. He talked about the first section of Acts 19. The other times are probably the three other times I've given this message that I'm going to give to you, at least a shortened version of it today. So this is not a very well-known passage, at least in church sermon canon. So with that said, I'd like to invite you into this story today. I was a little scared that Mark was actually going to steal my thunder last week when he started reading from Acts 19, since I had not heard anybody else preach on Acts 19 before. But thankfully for me, he stayed in that first part. But he also helped me out in getting us ready to hear about Paul's time in Ephesus and the riot with Demetrius. To begin with, I'd like to orient us with some of the geography of Ephesus so we know where the story is taking place. So the next few slides are going to give us a brief overview of the layout. On the map here, the main thing to show is the streets. You've got Caretas Street moving from the bottom right towards straight up and down. And where the theater to the harbor connecting that is the Arcadian Way. Those are the main streets in Ephesus. And so most likely where the Lower Agora is, it would have moved out into the Caretas Street and into the theater. So that would be just to give you an idea of where we are. Next. This is just a picture of Upper Ephesus. This was where the government officials and the administrators, all the big honchos, did their business and anything like that. It was the exclusive part of town. Paul had friends in the exclusive part of town up there. This is what separated the upper and lower part of town on the main street there, the Hercules Gate. You needed a special stone to get into the upper part of town. So you had to show the guards at the gate that you had this stone with your name on it, and that's what got you into the upper part. So next time you read Revelation 2:17 and the letter to the church at Pergamum, think about a white stone with a name on it, and you might recall this. This is all that's left of the harbor in Ephesus today. Most of the harbors we visited on the trip were river harbors, and so they had silted in a lot of ways. So there's not a lot of water left, so it doesn't really do it justice as to what Paul would have experienced, but this is where the harbor would have been. And then this is the Lower Agora, where Demetrius would have been selling his goods, and where the story really takes place. So Paul's time in Ephesus is on his third missionary journey, which began all the way back in Antioch, close to the eastern edge of the Mediterranean. Paul traveled the first part of the journey on foot all the way to Ephesus, a distance of at least 700 miles, although last week Mark mentioned that it was probably closer to 1,100 miles if you actually figured out where exactly he had to walk. This is over multiple mountain ranges, and it's a long and hard journey of at least 3 to 4 months, if not more. Notice at the beginning of Acts 19, we didn't read this part today, all it says is Paul took the road through the interior and arrived at Ephesus. So that trip from Antioch to Ephesus gets part of a verse in Acts. And this is one of the observations that I really resonated with and learned from in my travels in May, that Luke doesn't always like to tell us all the details of Paul's travels, but that doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of details there that are just skipped over. And so it's important to recognize that Paul's trips take a lot of time. And so just to put some of Paul's travels into perspective. So Paul arrives in Ephesus and gets right to work. Luke says that all of the Jews and Greeks who lived in this area heard the word of the Lord. This is partly because Ephesus is a large port city with about 250,000 people in Paul's day. Now, port cities were the places where the travel and trade occurred. People flowed in and out of port cities freely and shared their goods and ideas. In other words, Paul sets up shop in Ephesus, and the commodity that he shares is the gospel of Jesus. knowing that once it takes root, it will naturally spread to the rural areas and up and down the coastline. Some of Paul's longest stays are in Ephesus and Corinth, two of the largest port cities around the Mediterranean. Let's just say Paul chose his place as well. Paul becomes a well-known figure in Ephesus through his teaching and the miracles that God performed through him. People came out and openly confessed their evil deeds, and others who practiced sorcery even brought their scrolls to be burned publicly in Acts 19:19, right before our story. This is important for a couple of reasons. Next slide, please. First, Ephesus was a well-learned city. A little after Paul's time, a new library was built in 95 CE, called the Library of Celsus, which was the third largest library in the ancient world. So this library wouldn't have been here when Paul was there, but there most likely was a library of some sort when Paul was there. You don't build the third largest library in antiquity for no apparent reason. So it's a well-learned city, and that's important. Secondly, is just the sheer amount of money that these scrolls cost people that they ended up burning because of Paul's power and because of the honor that the Lord received there. It says in the story that they burned 50,000 drachma worth of scrolls. Now, a drachma was worth about a day's wages. So these people got rid of about 137 years worth of scrolls. Or if you think about that, people working 8 hours a day making $10 an hour, working every single day of the year for 137 years, they would be burning about $4 million worth of books today. It was a big demonstration. Big news. This incident clearly has economic implications. This is not good news for the scribes of Ephesus. But there's another group in Ephesus that is struggling financially from the message Paul is spreading about Jesus as well, besides the scribes. And they're the people who make their living off of the worship of the goddess Artemis. Now, about a mile out of the main town of Ephesus stood one of the ancient wonders of the world, one of the seven ancient wonders of the world, the Temple of Artemis, the goddess of hunting and the Great Mother. The temple itself was huge. It measured 425 feet by 225 feet, with 127 columns around it standing over 60 feet tall. You could fit a football field inside of it. So what we would expect over at JMU, that type of a stadium enclosed, that's about what you get with Artemis back then. And people came from all over the Mediterranean world to view the temple and to worship Artemis here. Of course, when people start coming to a place to visit and gawk at the site, what do the locals do? They cater to their needs. And people like Demetrius made little sculptures of the temple and of Artemis herself and sold them to all the worshipers who made pilgrimages to the temple. This is possibly what Artemis's little statue figurines would have looked like that Demetrius would have made. It's no different today. Go to any tourist destination and there are some kinds of trinkets, shirts, mugs, magnets, books, something to buy so you can remember that you've been there. This also happens at any professional sporting event. There are tons of paraphernalia to buy to show your support, to show your allegiance. Not much has changed in 2,000 years. With all that being said, let's actually get back into the story of Acts 19. Paul has already created quite a stir through the scroll burning. You can see the nervous faces on the vendors. You know, they know what happened to the sorcery and the scroll business can happen to theirs. So Demetrius, whose silver shrines of Artemis brings in a large business, calls together all the other silversmiths and craftsmen and to have a discussion about the way. Demetrius says to them, "You know, my friends, that we receive a good income from this business, and you see and hear how this fellow Paul has convinced and led astray a large number of people here in Ephesus and in practically the whole province of Asia. He says that gods made by human hands are no gods at all. There's danger not only that our trade will lose its good name, but also that the temple of the great goddess Artemis will be discredited, and the goddess herself, who is worshipped throughout the province of Asia and the world, will be robbed of her divine majesty. It's verses 25 and through 27. Notice there how Demetrius begins his little message to the craftsmen. He starts with the economic side of things. He says, we receive a good income from this business. There is danger not only that our trade will lose its good name, he says. His initial rallying point has nothing to do with whether or not what Paul says is true, or if Artemis is really that great. Demetrius is not overtly pious. Demetrius tugs at their heartstrings that are attached to their income and wealth. He knows what will truly motivate this group of people, and that is money. Any threat to their income and livelihood is a threat that needs to be dealt with and dealt with now. Only then does Demetrius go on to talk about how Artemis will be discredited as well, but only after he has buttered them up. The craftsmen respond shouting, help! Help us save our business! To the other people, right? That's what they say. No, it's not what they say. They do the smart thing and start shouting, great is Artemis of the Ephesians! They bring the rest of the people of Ephesus together over what they are proud of, Artemis of the Ephesians. The craftsmen use the people's patriotic zeal for Artemis to bring them in to face this threat of Jesus for the Ephesian way of life. And what do you know? Pretty soon the whole city is in an uproar, seizing Paul's traveling buddies and rushing into theater to do their own form of justice. Next slide, please. It is important to remember that there was little to no privacy in ancient cities, especially ancient cities the size of Ephesus. As Wayne Meeks describes it, much of life was lived on the streets and sidewalks, squares and porticos. Not much that happened in a neighborhood would escape the eyes of the neighbors. News or rumor would travel rapidly. Riots could flare up in a moment. Which also explains why Luke says, the assembly was in confusion. Some were shouting one thing, some another. Most of the people did not even know why they were there. Things could happen so quickly, and because Ephesus was such a big and busy city, a group could form in the street and be swept into the theater, and most people would not have known what in the world was going on. In fact, most of them would probably just stay there to egg things on in hopes of a good show. So what do we have here? We have an angry mob that has formed and taken two of Paul's companions into the theater. And what does Paul want to do? Paul wants to flee as quickly as possible and get out of town, abandon his friends and save his own hide, right? No, that is the last thing on Paul's mind. Paul wants to break every rule of what to do when a mob forms. He wants to go appear before the crowd, to set things right, to take on these worshipers of Artemis and the silversmiths. However, Paul's disciples and his friends would not let him go into the theater. Paul receives a message from his friends who were officials of the province, begging him not to go. Note that Paul is well respected in this city and has managed to make friends with the government officials in the upper part of town. Remember how there's an upper and lower part of Ephesus? Paul's made friends in this upper part of town, as well as people down in the lower parts. It's amazing how he's able to reach such a diverse group of people. So back in the theater, we have the Jews looking to get their voice heard, to distance themselves from these Christians, and the crowd responds by shouting for over two straight hours. Eventually, the city clerk comes and he gets the crowd quieted down and is able to address the group. He goes on to calm the crowd by explaining that Paul and his disciples have not robbed the temple nor blasphemed Artemis, meaning that Paul has managed to preach Jesus and the good news of Christ as opposed to bashing the worship of Artemis. Paul allows the good news of Jesus to speak for itself. The clerk then goes on to talk about the danger of rioting, because Rome would not stand for riots, especially in port cities as important as Ephesus, so necessary for trade and travel. So what can we learn from this story in Acts 19? Is it another Moses versus Pharaoh story? The God of Paul against Artemis, the goddess of Demetrius? Everything that made sense to the silversmiths and craftsmen is being challenged. The status quo is called into question. The message of Jesus is running counter to the economic system, the way of life for most of the Ephesians, and it is causing problems. I think we would easily agree with Paul that gods made by humans are no gods at all. But the question remains, what gods do we still give value and credence to? Are we more like Demetrius than we think in our response to the gospel message of Jesus? What are some of the things that we desire in life? What are we invested in? Where do we find happiness and purpose? Where are our energies going? Perhaps the ideals of money, wealth, power, beauty, notoriety, or status, something drives how we live. It drove Demetrius. One brief example. What about our desire to stay connected? To always know what is going on? To have the newest gadget or smartphone? I think that, in ways, can be an idol. Think about this. Since June 2007, there have been 18 different releases of the iPhone. How many versions have you had? Technology is great in helping us research and stay connected, but how is it impacting our everyday lives? What if we didn't focus on these things? What if they weren't what drove us to do something? What about trends in the church that mirror society as opposed to being the prophetic voice that we are called to be? More often than not, I think the church is a reflection of society as opposed to living out Kingdom of God principles. How amazing is it that Paul was able to preach and live out the message of Jesus and did not have to vocally decry Artemis worship? People turned to Paul's message because it was life-giving. Is the church still life-giving today? Or is it stuck in the quagmires of the political and social debates, draining the life of those inside the church as well as those out? The way Paul lived lined up with what he said day in and day out, and people were leaving their worship of Artemis to live into the abundant life of Christ. Now, my favorite part of this Acts 19 story is that Demetrius, in all his squabbling and complaining about Paul and the Christians, in all of that, Demetrius is right. Paul and the others had limited Demetrius's ability to make money off of Artemis, and he was scared. Paul was taking away their business, and he knew he had no real chance at taking Paul on in court because Paul hadn't done anything wrong. So he did the only thing he could. He tried to start a last-ditch effort to riot, to serve some mob justice to the Christians. And he does this by telling the truth. He says, "There is danger, not only that our trade will lose its good name, but also that the temple of the great goddess Artemis will be discredited, and the goddess herself, who is worshipped throughout the province of Asia and the world, will be robbed of her divine majesty." And what do you know? Demetrius was right. Credit, there are not a lot of buildings left from 2,000 years ago. But you would think one of the seven ancient wonders of the world might be in a little better shape than one column and part of another column and a place for the birds. Paul's proclamation of the kingdom of God, both in word and deed, was enough to turn the people from Artemis and dethrone her in Ephesus. 2,000 years later, Artemis worship is non-existent, while people worship the God Paul preached all over the globe. May we present the gospel like Paul did, confronting the idols and human-made gods of our days with a life of integrity and compassion. May our following of Jesus and living the abundant life that he provides be more than enough to flip society on its head. May we go forth carrying the same message that Paul did with us every step of the way. Amen.